Good afternoon. Welcome to the second hour of We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. My name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cundiff.
Who's our sponsor, Bill?
Our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery.
Huh.
Yeah, they're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. Go up and see them. They're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And they have lots of tractors in stock right now. Go up and take a look at what they've got. They've got mowers. They've got zero-turn mowers. They've got it all. So go up and see them or give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Be sure and plan for your generator since I'm sure PG&E will be shutting the power off.
Oh, yeah, lots. Summertime's coming. Usually that's a winter thing, but around here it's summertime. You're going to need a generator. So, yeah, they've got a nice line of Honda generators up there. They've got those in stock as well. So go up and get a deal.
Nice. So, yeah, sorry about the unceremonious exit there, Dr. Pry.
Quite all right.
We've been kind of running over our brakes, and it was kind of like, yeah, he's like flagging me from in there, like, yeah, we got a break. Well, yeah, whatever. Oh, yeah, this is the one where the news comes. Sorry.
No, don't be sorry. As a matter of fact, it kind of some part of the news that was relayed during the break. Do you folks hear the news? I could hear it.
Yeah, we do.
Your audience. Oh, right. You know, it was actually fortuitous, and I think instructive to what we were talking about. You know, the administration, the new administration, this totalitarian movement and its proclivity to make public policy based on fiction and fantasy, you know, all because of political correctness and a belief system that just is disconnected from reality. There are so many things they have done during the first week of the Biden administration that it's hard to keep track of all of them, things that are profoundly damaging to our national security and to our society, and one of them was reported just now during the break, how the Biden, in fact, it's twofold, they were actually connected, that people listening to these things, you know, it might pass right by them, but first, you know, they reported that the Biden administration is leaning on Saudi Arabia now over its human rights record, okay? And it's also going to suspend aid to those who are combating the Houthis in Yemen. That we're basically pulling out financial support to try to stabilize the government of Yemen against the Houthis. And the larger story behind that is this is representing a sea change away from the Trump administration policies back to the bad old days of the Obama foreign policy, you know, because of, you know, basically leaning on Saudi Arabia is appeasing Iran. You know, Saudi Arabia is what we call a moderate Arab state, okay? And, you know, while I'm no big fan of the kingdom, yes, the Saudis had, obviously there's a lot of Islamic radicalism percolating in Saudi Arabia, but at least the Saudis aren't overtly supporting global terrorist organizations the way Iran is, all right? And the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and so, you know, Trump was trying to organize a NATO alliance for the Middle East comprising Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, and Egypt, and all the moderate Arab states, and Israel. And he actually succeeded in doing that, which is really a formula for bringing lasting peace to the Middle East, to have these states, these disparate states, united. But Iran is obviously against that, because Iran is the threat that unites all of them. And so this is signaling to Iran about criticizing Saudi Arabia's human rights records. And also the Biden administration is thinking about canceling, you know, the $50 billion arms deal, you know, that we've got going to arm Saudi Arabia so that it can defend itself against Iran. So that's part of it. The other thing the obviously the newscaster didn't see these things as connected. But Yemen is on the border, it's on the southeastern border of Saudi Arabia. And the Saudis are trying to bring back a friendly government in Yemen so their southern flank isn't threatened. So by us basically not supporting the Saudis anymore in Yemen, you know, that we're going to pull out of the our financial support out of Yemen, that's an even bigger signal to Iran, because the Iran, the Houthis, are proxies for Iran. They are armed for Iran. They're radical Islamist terrorists. They're in the next Al-Qaeda. And they have ballistic missiles. You know, most Americans don't hear about it, but almost every week the Houthis are launching ballistic missiles at the Saudi capital. They've actually killed the Saudi Air Force general a couple of years ago by striking one of the Saudi Arabian air bases. They killed the general of the Saudi Arabian Air Force that way. I mean, think about that. You know, here's a terrorist group that really practically owns Yemen, you know, because it's not like they're up in the hills or anything. They're really in control of Yemen right now. And so they've got a group that is as bad as the Taliban or as bad as Al-Qaeda, that controls the whole country, that's on the flank of one of our allies in the Middle East, and they have ballistic missiles. You know, if those guys got hold of a nuclear weapon and they put one of those missiles on a freighter, they could attack us with an EMP attack. You know, technologically speaking, they're, except for the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, okay, they're the most advanced terrorist organization in the world technologically right now, and they have, and there are hundreds and thousands of them. You know, they're not a relatively small group like Al Qaeda was, or even like ISIS. You know, there's hundreds of thousands of them, of these radicalized Houthis. So that's that story that we just heard, and so right in front of our ears, as it were, you know, we just heard another huge sea change in our foreign policy that's going to be very dangerous for our national security. A couple of other things that have happened that are fit in the category of being out of the fantasy world and are driven by left-wing ideology and not common sense, you know, as Biden has, during his first week, you know, he decided to renew the New START treaty. I think on your show in the past, we've talked about the New START Treaty and how the Russians are almost certainly violating the New START Treaty, just the way they are violating all the other arms control treaties that we have with them, and that this is among the most significant treaties, perhaps the single most significant strategic treaty as far as our national security is concerned, because the strategic weapons limited by New START are the weapons that can reach our homeland. And it is not acceptable for Russia be cheating on the New START treaty and to have possibly twice as many nuclear weapons. We know their nuclear weapons are more sophisticated than our weapons already, you know, because we have not modernized our nuclear weapons. President Trump didn't have really time to do it. He had time to spend money and increase the budget, but it's going to take a decade, or more than a decade, really, to start trying to catch up to the Russians and to the Chinese, you know, in terms of the modernity of our nuclear delivery systems and our nuclear weapons. And the left is out there as soon as Biden did that. And Biden, it also, in effect, by ratifying the New START Treaty and saying, yes, we're extending the New START Treaty for 5 years, he's basically forgiving them. And even under the tenets of international law, this can be used against us to say, well, since you did ratify, extend the New START Treaty, that means that you are okay with anything the Russians have done in terms of violating the New START Treaty, that you are implicitly recognizing that these violations are acceptable to you. And all the things that they clearly have done outside of the New START Treaty that are unacceptable, that threaten our national security, new kinds of nuclear weapons that aren't even covered by the New START Treaty, we're accepting all of that. Rushing to Biden's defense now are, you know, idiots in the press who don't know anything, but are willing to, you know, are willing to, are standing up and trying to convince us you know, that it doesn't matter. This is okay, okay? And, and they're doing it, not necessarily addressing the New START treaty directly, but, for example, in the National Interest this past week, there was an article by the editor of National Interest, a guy named David Axe, and it just appalls me. I mean, the state of journalism is an aside, I have to say, that we have such people who are totally unqualified, you know, to be writing on these issues, you know. You know, David Axe, it was a cartoonist, okay, literally. His base background is a cartoonist. He never had any service in the defense or intelligence communities. You know, he doesn't have any academic credentials. Never took a strategic studies program course or anything.
Well, for heaven's sakes, they let Brian Williams be a news guy again after he,
yeah, I know.
After he fictionalized how many different accounts and, I mean, that was
right. These people.
That was kind of one of those where you go, there's really no good explanation for that. How you could insert yourself into all those stories and now be considered a news guy,
an expert. Yeah.
Got to take a really quick break. We're going to come back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, and I hope you enjoy time traveling with us today because it's just going by so fast. It's very, very weird. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Europe, I'm America. There's a growing feeling of hysteria. Conditioned to respond to all the threats in the rhetorical speeches of the Soviets. Mr. Khrushchev said he will bury you. I don't subscribe to this point of view. You'd be such an ignorant thing to do if the Russians love children too.
Brian Williams song. But, they, you know, although people will say, you know, Dr. Pry, I'm sure you hear the same thing from people. People say they don't believe the media, but they listen to it and basically believe it. I don't know any other way to put that.
I think even skeptical, conservative, cautious people, you know, when you're inundated, you know, with the media, the left-wing view on the media, there's infiltration that happens, you know, subtle infiltration, and you start making assumptions about things. You think there must be some truth in it. It can't be a complete lie, right?
Yeah, everybody wouldn't be telling the same thing if it was all a lie.
Right, and by slow degree, and since the left overwhelmingly dominates the media, and not just the news media, but even the cultural media, the thing you watch for entertainment, which is perhaps where the subtle brainwashing, you know, is most effective. You know, it starts shifting societal reflexes and attitudes on things, and there's been kind of a permanent thing on that. Before I get to this example, though, I wanted to complete my David Axe commentary about, you know, about how now that Biden has made this folly, this dangerous decision to extend the New START treaty, that the left wing media, not just the left wing media, or journals even and newspapers that are considered respectable, you know, like the National Interest is actually supposed to be moderate. I think it's a little bit. It leans left, okay, but it's not radical left or anything, you know. But David Axe is the editor of it, and there's been a spate of articles out there by the media to justify what Biden did, implicitly justified, even even though they don't mention Biden. They don't mention the New START treaty. But there's an effort afoot to now convince people that the Russian nuclear threat isn't really a nuclear threat. For example, the David Axe article. He doesn't talk about New START or anything, but he's trying to say, oh, the hypersonic missile threat is really hyped. And he's just parroting the Union of Concerned Scientists. I think we've talked past in the show about how, you know, one of the disadvantages we have in competing with totalitarian states and trying to defend ourselves against them is that we have the liberty of free speech, but it also becomes a dangerous burden to us, you know, in the intellectual contest, in the internal conversation that happens in our society, you know, because we are riddled with these left-wing, anti-nuclear, basically socialist groups that are serve as front operations for our enemies, okay? That Union of Concerned Scientists, the Federation of Concerned Scientists, Plowshares Organization, all of them are never critical of Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, never. You know, they never criticize their nuclear threats. They are not a threat to humanity. Only not. It's only when we start trying to modernize our systems. And so David Axe picks up and parrots the Union of Concerned Scientists, Plowshares line that the hypersonic weapon threat is grossly exaggerated by the Pentagon. The Pentagon is hysterical. The Pentagon doesn't know what it's talking about. I mean, how could anybody with common sense believe that stuff? But there are obviously a lot of people who do believe it because they subscribe and keep national interests afloat when they put out such so irresponsible things. Of course the Pentagon knows what it's talking about, and the Union of Concerned Scientists doesn't. If you look at the so-called scientists, the Union of Concerned Scientists, I can't remember his first name, it's somebody named Tracy. You know, he's some 20-year-old kid, you know, probably is part of a college class project, you know, put together propaganda for the Union of Concerned Scientists trying to argue that the hypersonic weapons are being hyped as a threat, and they are not. They are absolutely, in fact, they make the EMP threat even more dangerous, you know, because these things can arrive faster than ICBMs can. They can elude our radar and our interceptors, and they operate at altitudes, you know, 50 to 100 kilometers. They're flying along the top of the atmosphere. You know, that's kind of an optimum altitude for doing an EMP attack, which will also further decrease the arrival time if you don't have to re-enter the atmosphere. You know, so that's just one example. There's another example of, you know, this guy is even a bigger idiot. Russia's massively powerful nukes are strategic duds. That's the title of his article. Russia's massively powerful nukes are strategic duds. They're written by somebody called Alex Hollings, who's got a master's degree in communications. I mean, that's his, you know, his expertise.
Wow.
This guy does, you know, he's obviously cribbed from Wikipedia, okay, to describe the Russian nuclear arsenal. I mean, and a lot of that is wrong in terms of the technical details, but he's trying to establish his expertise by putting out a lot of it, of this stuff. But why are Russia's massively powerful nukes strategic duds? Well, because everybody knows you can't use nuclear weapons, you know, that it would be the end of the world, so the Russians will never use nuclear weapons. And so the fact that they're building 100 megaton bombs and all these exotic nuclear weapons, we don't have to worry about
them. Oh, I feel better already.
Use them. Yeah, and everybody knows that, right? You know,
yeah.
And unfortunately, I mean, this is I mentioned this particular one because it's a good example of how if you repeat, even if it's a stupid, irrational opinion, but if you say it often enough and enough people seem to be saying it, can penetrate consciousness. And people who have to work for a living, who don't work in nuclear strategy or intelligence, national security for a living, most Americans probably accept that without even thinking about it too. That, yeah, there'll never be a nuclear war because mutual assured destruction is going to stop it, and nobody will ever use nuclear weapons. That's the premise that's the whole point of his article. And we have had lengthy discussions on this show about how that is untrue. And, you know, and history proves it is untrue. You know, if you go and the same arguments were made before World War I and before World War II. You know, their whole books were written, you know, before World War One, about how the machine gun and, you know, the size and power of modern armies, you could mass military millions of men and transport them by railroads, and that a great war, like the kind of war they had in Napoleonic times, that if you had another war like that, it would be, you know, 10 times more damaging to Europe. And the economies would not survive. And because all the economies were linked, it would be, you know, a catastrophe for all nations. And therefore, there aren't going to be any more big wars like the Napoleonic Wars. That was actually a widely held view. There was a best-selling book called The Great Illusion, written by Norman Angell, you know, in 1910, you know, 4 years before World War One. He basically made that same argument. I mean, he was the Alex Holley of his day, you know, saying that all these weapons are so terrible and so destructive they would never be used. Well, he turned out to be wrong. The assessment was right that the weapons are so destructive that it would destroy European civilization practically, and it did. It killed a whole generation off. You know, but it didn't stop the war from coming. Because human nature doesn't change. And the way states think and behave doesn't change. The logic of military strategy doesn't change. And even with the example of World War One right in front of their eyes, you know, a generation later, you know, they were saying the same thing. Bombers, chemical weapons, you know, the experience of World War One proves that the technologies are even more destructive now, and it's going to be even worse. So even Hitler can't believe, you know, that he could win a World War II, or Tojo, Imperial Japan. And so there's going to be peace. We can negotiate. We can appease these people and get along and live together in peace, and there's not going to be war, but the war happened. And now they're saying the same thing about nuclear weapons. It's unthinkable they could be used. Well, the Russians and Chinese and North Koreans aren't building these things, you know, just to amuse themselves. You know, they obviously think that there's a big advantage in having them, and their military doctrines, plans, and exercise all show them using them in ways to win wars. So, you know, this is just another example of the kind of fantasy. This is a particular dangerous fantasy, though, because over decades of brainwashing our own people into believing that nuclear weapons are not usable in war, you know, most people still believe that, but it's a fantasy.
That no one's really going to do that.
Yeah,
I mean, they think of everything is blow up the whole world, and I think what most people don't understand is nuclear weapons can be much more strategic than that. We were watching a thing, what was it called? It was called Spy something.
Spycraft.
It was a series on
Netflix.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll start the sentence. That's why we can't host this alone or sharing a brain. You got to have both of us in the same room where we can't complete a...
Yeah, that was a good show. It's a mini series. Talks about
left me hanging.
Talks about cyber attacks.
Talked about how they had these little nuclear weapons that they used. There was assassination. Was the segment on?
Oh yeah, with a little radioactive pellet that the Russians use.
Yeah, stabbed a guy with an umbrella in the back of the calf. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Bottom line is, if you decide to spy on these guys or try to get away from them. Good luck with that. You should watch the series first.
Yes.
You might want to just, learn to be happy where you are.
Yeah, the cyber warfare segment was very interesting.
It was super interesting.
A lot about what we just talked about.
Yeah, anyway.
And how they get away with it and how they do it.
A little plug there in case you wanted to learn more about that. So our guest is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. We will be right back with him, and you're listening to We the People Radio at wethepeopleradio.us.
Now don't talk to me about the polar bear. Don't talk to me about the ozone layer. Ain't so much of anything these days, even the air. They're running out of rhinos, what do I care? Let's hear it for the dolphin. Let's hear it for the trees. Ain't running out of nothing in my deep freeze. It's casual entertainment we aim to.
up boots and faded jeans, a homemade sandwich, a half a jug of tea. Average Joe, average pay, same old end, the same old day. But there's nothing wrong with a hard hat and a hammer, kind of glue that sticks this world together. Hands of steel and cradle of the promised land. God bless the working man.
Play that for all the people who thought they were going to have jobs on the pipeline that they wrecked. So have you by chance seen that that Netflix series with all the spycraft stuff and the cyber warfare and that kind of thing?
No, I haven't.
It was like right up your alley. We were watching it last night. I thought, oh, this is all the kind of stuff you talk about. It was kind of interesting for those of us who don't operate in that, you know, sphere all the time. It's amazing how those technologies can be, you know, used. I guess that's what most people think, you know, nuclear. Oh, yeah. They think of Three Mile Island. They think of Chernobyl and Hiroshima. I know.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it amazing?
Uh-huh. I think that's probably the first top three.
Nagasaki, and we did use nuclear weapons. See, we did use them. We'd use them. And we are the most benign, morally sophisticated, just society that has ever existed in world history. And we used them. And we were right to use them. Because when you do the calculus, and a calculus was done by our political and military leaders about whether it was the right thing to do, and they did. It saved millions of lives on both sides by doing it. But we did it. We used nuclear weapons. So those who think that a nuclear war can never happen, it will never happen, remember that. We used them. And we are basically the most benign society that has ever existed. So why do we think that totalitarian dictatorships like North Korea and China and Russia or in Iran with their ferocious ideologies, their leaders, bloody with the hands of their own people, and with the lives of Americans whenever they can kill them. Why do we think they're going to be more restrained than we were during World War II? Anyway, it's puzzling. It's just an example, perhaps, of a fantasy where the left has managed to brainwash most people with its irrational perspective over the years. But also the point that you made earlier, Aaron, about, you know, the thing I worry about equally or even more is the fact that the weapons are strategic. Mm-hmm. And you can use, which means you can achieve victory in the geostrategic chess game, but the mere threat of their use, you know, the implication of their use, without actually blowing one up and having an actual nuclear war. You know, the greatest victory is to achieve victory without war. The way we did in the Cold War, we used them then too. You know, we managed to defeat the Soviet Union, the evil empire, the most powerful totalitarian state that ever existed in history. We managed to win bloodlessly, you know, because of our nuclear weapons. We managed to contain them by maintaining the nuclear balance all through the Cold War, and then they imploded because of the internal contradictions of communism. And it was kind of a miracle that it happened, but it was a miracle that was backed up by good strategic thinking and the fact that we did not allow them to achieve any significant advantage in the nuclear balance. And now, my goodness, when I look at how the balance has shifted against us, it's really terrifying, and it's not going to get better. You know, I've oftentimes thought that the only thing standing between us and a nuclear holocaust is the aggressive personality of President Trump. You know, he was such a super patriot and so obviously aggressive that I think our adversaries were afraid of him, you know. And I was hoping that would buy us enough time to get our deterrent modernized. Now with Joe Biden at the helm, well, this is going to be an interesting experiment.
Yeah, we can call it interesting, I guess.
Right, like the old Chinese saying, may you not live in interesting times.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of interesting things. Hey, tell me this. Does it, because I may just be, you know, self-deluding, but I'm kind of excited to see all the Obama people come back just because they're a known quantity and they were pretty worthless when they were in before.
Oh, I get excited every time I see Jen Psaki do a news or a hey, press conference.
We'll circle back on that.
Okay, let's circle back on that. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
No, I mean, does that worry you, or do you think that's actually kind of
a comforting?
Yeah,
because it might be just a continuation of the Obama administration.
Yeah, getting nowhere. A whole lot of a bunch of corruptocrats patting each other on the back.
It doesn't comfort me, you know, because
darn it,
because we because the far left is now the center of the Democrat Party,
yeah,
you know,
that's true.
Their political base has moved so far to the left now. I mean, basically the Black Lives Matter Party. And these people they're totalitarian personalities or robots. They have, you know, they are going to, I think they're going to do, Obama would have liked to have done the things that Black Lives Matter wants to do, and that Antifa wants to do, okay? But he didn't have the political opportunity to do it because the party wasn't advanced enough yet in its thinking, wasn't woke enough yet in its thinking. There were still too many people with moderate view in that party. But that's not the situation now. And they're just getting started. I mean, you have to judge them by their fruits. One of their fruits is the New START Treaty. They're obviously going to try to renew, you know, we just talked about how they're changing the foreign policy in the Middle East to appease Iran. I think that's the prelude to delivering on the promise to bring back the Iran nuclear deal, even though Iran probably already has nuclear weapons. You know, one of the first things that Biden did in his first week, curious that he would give such high priority to this, but he canceled President Trump's executive order on securing the bulk power system. You know, most people wouldn't even know about that. I mean, I know about that because it's right in the area of my national security concerns. Fortunately, he hasn't canceled the EMP executive order yet. And I have heard, interestingly, that I have some connections to the Biden transition team and the like, and I'm being told, I mean, there are smoke signals that, you know, that they're not going to cancel the EMP executive order, which would be tremendously good news if that doesn't happen. And, you know, so maybe there's some hope there, okay? But they did cancel this other executive order, and, you know, it's an executive order that seems so far down in the technical weeds that you'd think nobody would notice it. Nobody except China, you know, because this executive order securing the bulk power system was basically signed late in the Trump administration. One of the recommendations that I and the EMP Commission and other, you know, experts on critical infrastructure security made, one of the recommendations we made was, you know, we shouldn't be buying transformers and SCADAs and equipment critical to our electric grid from China. You know, we've got to stop, you know, because they're doing cyber warfare against us. And they're allied with Russia. And the Chinese can be rigging these systems with back doors to make them more vulnerable to cyber attacks and more vulnerable to EMP, too. You know, we wouldn't buy our aircraft carriers or jet fighters from China. So why are we buying this stuff that it supports the lives of 330 million Americans from China? And that was the purpose of that executive order, so that we would buy American, you know, that these anything that's critical to our critical infrastructures and to the survival of the American people should be made in America. And that was the point of that executive order. And China Joe suspended that executive order. He's probably going to cancel it. Why would he do why would he do that? That's a strange thing. It makes one wonder about his Manchurian candidate status. Mm-hmm. You know, is this one of the first signs that this guy really does belong to China? Because I can't think of, obviously, the FERC and the NERC and the electric power lobbies they didn't like the executive order, and I'm sure they were calling for its suspension. And they might have the power to get it suspended, but I shouldn't think that it would have been one of the first things the president would do. You know, they're not part of his political base. But maybe China is part of his political base.
Maybe. And, I'm not sure that's right, a maybe so then, anymore.
So when he does things like that, the president of Jen Psaki, you know, gives me cold comfort. The other thing that sends a chill up my spine, in terms of his priorities and in terms of what the coloration of this new administration is going to be, is it going to be pink or is it going to be red, okay, is one of his first acts as president, his cancellation of the 1776 Commission.
Yeah.
You know, just stood up by President Trump late in his administration, alas, too late. Cancellation of the the great sin of the 1776 Commission is that it wants to teach an objective version of American history, you know, the kind of American history that we were taught when we were growing up, not a blind patriotism, but a balanced type. And if it is objective and fair and balanced, you do end up with patriotism because you appreciate how great this country is from its history. You see all of its flaws, but you also see how better, more than any other society on earth, it has provided a just society, struggled hard to overcome the imperfections, and has been better for more people than any other society ever has been on earth. And President Biden doesn't want this taught to American children or in American universities. Instead, they want the 1619 Project to prevail, and critical race theory, which has also been, that executive order was canceled too, banning the teaching of critical race theory. So that's now also going to be taught everywhere. And, you know, which is basically a Marxist view of American history and of Americans.
Yeah,
we are.
How can that be a problem? You know, I think unfortunately we have almost two camps. You know, one side is panicked that we're getting rid of everything, and the other side says, "Oh, none of this is even real. This isn't really happening. And if it is, it's just a little, and it's not going to matter." I guess I would really encourage people to pay attention.
Yeah.
We did a show a few weeks back on the 1619.
1619, right?
Yeah, we did. The guy wrote a book called 1620. Really a well thought out guy. And so anyway, I hope you'll look at our archives, and in case the 1619 Project isn't familiar to you, if you have kids in school, it better be familiar to you, because it's not always part of the official curriculum. So if you're sitting on the school board and you think you can stop it there, he was pretty clear that a lot of that is being integrated at the classroom level. Got to take a really quick break. We'll be back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Bry. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
He's got the power, and you're so weak, and your frustration will not let you speak. La 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 la.
They ever. Hey, just a little note on the webpage for today. I got Gregory Wrightstone. I've got his website on there, and also realclimatescience.com. Their .org must have expired, but their realclimatescience.com is on there. And their archives go back to January of 2015, so there is a ton of information on there. And so anyway, those two recommendations are duly noted, just in case you didn't have a pen when we talked about them last hour. All right, so Dr. Pry, here in the final throes of our time together, any thoughts on what people, besides getting informed, that's kind of a given, but beyond that, anything us just regular folks out here can be doing or should be doing?
Yeah, you regular folks can make all the difference. But before I get into that, I'd just like to make one more comment on why I don't take comfort from, you know, the return of the Obama administration people, which I think is also deliberate, meant to provide false comfort to people that there's going to be continuity. It's really, I don't see how any American can be deceived. Well, I guess self-deceit is easy. Look, on January 20th, I took a pilgrimage to Washington, okay? I just had to see it for myself.
Oh.
The occupation of the city of Washington
uh-huh.
by the U.S. Army. 25,000 troops, 2.5 divisions. More troops than we had in Washington during the American Civil War to protect it, supposedly, from an enemy within. I stood in the middle of Pennsylvania Avenue for 30 minutes outside the barriers that had concertina wire and gates, and closing the entire Washington Mall area, not just a few buildings, the whole mall. That includes the White House, the Capitol, all the monuments, everything where you couldn't get anywhere within sight of the inauguration, okay? Normally, you'd be dead in a couple of seconds if you were standing in the middle of Pennsylvania Avenue because of the traffic. But there was no traffic. There were no cars. There were almost no people on the sidewalks. Everybody was hiding inside their homes. The sidewalks were, the only people in evidence were soldiers everywhere. I saw one protester, some old guy on a bicycle, quickly rode up to the, pedaling furiously, you know, past the gates and shouted out that the election was stolen. And that was it. 25,000 troops to protect the Biden administration from that. You know, I think that the occupation of Washington is done because the Democrats know they stole the election. And they know, we know, they stole the election. And they are afraid that an outraged American people might do something on an even bigger scale than happened at the Capitol on January 6th. And that's why there's 25,000 troops in Washington and why they're going to stay there, you know, through March or until the future. But what can we do? Well, I think we need to take the long road and face reality that this isn't politics as usual. You know, that we are facing a totalitarian takeover of our country. And we have to start organizing for a peaceful second American revolution. You know, I think when you say we are so used to expecting heroes in the Senate or President Trump or somebody else like him to come along, and we won't have to do it much of anything except support them, you know. But I think it should have been proven to us that the system basically has reached a point, you know, where it's really profoundly broken. You know, the Republican Party can't be trusted and doesn't work. The court system doesn't work and doesn't uphold the law or even the Constitution. And in Washington itself, the culture there, anybody who's there, even President Trump wasn't competent to use the levers of power at his disposal to stop this from happening. So it's up, and frankly, he wasn't a good general. I mean, I know I'm going to anger some people, but we've talked before. You know, I thought he's a great man in terms of being a populist and a speaker and had vision. But he was too inexperienced and never learned how to use the levers of power. You know, President Trump is right. Winning is everything. Mm. And he was defeated and let himself to be defeated. They stole the election from him like taking candy from a baby. You know, it's up to us to organize. Shows like yours can become, you know, before the first American Revolution, there were these things called the Committees of Correspondence that were in operation for a decade before the first American Revolution, where people in the 13 colonies used these committees to communicate, to talk about what King George was doing, to lay plans. What should we do? You know, can we protest? Should we stay in Britain? Should we be preparing for a revolution? The American Revolution didn't just happen, you know. automatically. It was planned, you know, for a decade before it actually happened, and we were organized and ready for it. I think that we don't need a violent revolution, although if that becomes necessary, that's why there is a Second Amendment. I don't think that the current crowd of people are competent enough. They're so used to being obeyed. They have the illusion that they're in power, that Washington and that the levers of power available to them are concrete, you know, and that we will automatically obey what they say and follow the law because we're sheep. You know, the Declaration of Independence was absolutely right, that governments exist by the consent of the governed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's only because we consent to be governed that they have power. As soon as we choose to disobey, ultimately each of us as individuals, but as a group collectively, 75 million of us, choosing to disobey, they would not be able to handle that. They can't put millions of us in jail. We have to organize to the point where we can say something like, just as an example, we're not going to pay our income taxes. The 75 million of us aren't going to pay income taxes unless certain demands are met about having really free and fair elections that can be verified, you know, about really respecting the Constitution and people's gun rights and not trying to brainwash our kids in public schools. In fact, I'm going to pull my kids out. I have already done so, but speaking as an everyman, you know, one of the things people can do is pull their kids out of public school. They're getting brainwashed and they're getting lousy educations anyway. Any parent, you know, can do a better job educating their own children and passing on their values. And if you don't do that, your kids are going to grow up hating you and hating your values.
Yeah, because so if the 1619 Project is the one that informs you on your American history, you're in really big trouble.
Right. And consider this. You know, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and all of that crowd, they are, when it comes to the science and art of totalitarianism, they are nothing compared to the leaders of the Soviet Union, the Warsaw Pact. Those were the most powerful, most advanced. They had turned enslaving people into a science.
Mm-hmm.
And they had instruments of power far more powerful than anything available to Washington. The KGB was far more effective and far more powerful than the FBI. And yet, when people lost faith in communism, and enough of the individuals living in those societies said, I'm not going to obey anymore.
Yeah.
My elites are corrupt.
The wheels come off the wagon. We're out of time yet again, Dr. Pry. We will have you back because we love chatting with you, and you're full of information, and I guess we're never full of good news, but at least it's factual, huh? So we're going to go with facts over just buoyant topics. How's that? We've got some good resources for you on the website, though, Inconvenient Facts and also the realclimatescience.com. Please go on there and check those out. Next week, voter fraud, and we're cutting into the news. I can hear it.